Welcome to Hubbub, the People's Podcast, where we engage our citizens and investors with the activities of the Planning and Code Administration and encourage everyone to contribute to Hagerstown's growth.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the 25th edition of the Hubbub Podcast. How are you doing, Donnie?
I'm doing.
It's Harcum, right?
Yes, Donnie Harcum here with my awesome co-host, Mr. Sean Brown. I'm doing well.
Good.
It's hot outside. We're in the middle of the summer, but we're on to year number 3 of the Hubbub Podcast. So, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Doing good. Yeah, everything's going pretty smooth.
Good.
Just glad to be here. It's hard to believe we've just done 2 years of the podcast.
Yeah, it is hard to believe. Like I always say, they kept us around this long. We're doing something right, I guess.
Yeah, we're not being paid, so we can't be fired. And
true.
We do it because we love the people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, this month's podcast is a very much a different topic, a very interesting topic. Some would say it's a debatable topic or
controversial.
That's a good word.
Yeah,
for sure. That's a good word. And so today we're going to be talking about the topic of CBD, medical cannabis. Just like so many things, I think the same thing is true with you, that before we looked into this topic and started preparing it, I wasn't sure about a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know much about it at all. So we're going to go over a lot of information that will be helpful just to look back on or listen back on as we go through it, because we will cover a lot of information today. A lot of good information. You know, even if you just don't know much about it, me and Sean didn't know much about it. So it's just good stuff to be informed of.
Yeah, and not just not knowing a lot about it, but there were certain even assumptions I thought were true. So, you know, our podcast today, you know, kind of dispel maybe some myths. We're going to provide some facts as we receive them, really kind of from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So we're going to talk about a number of things about how, you know, just like a lot of topics that we discussed in the podcast, this topic, it does relate back to our department and our community because it is about the safety and well-being of the community. Many people, we know that you and the community, as this continues to grow, and it is in our community, we're going to talk about that a little bit. How does it affect our community? You know, how does it work? So by the end of this podcast, you're going to be fully informed about how the medical cannabis community works, and some really, really good information. And, you know, the fact is that these laws, and they are heavy regulated, as we're going to talk about today, they vary from state to state. Today we're going to focus on Maryland because there are a lot of state laws that come into play, but then even we're going to discuss the activity as it relates to Hagerstown, because we do have these facilities in Hagerstown, and we're going to discuss about, you know, how that process works within the city as well. So a lot of good information.
Absolutely. All right, well, we'll jump right into this. And, you know, one of the first questions that is asked is, why is growing cannabis permitted? Well, a state or local municipality, they'll pass a law or ordinance allowing cannabis to be grown in communities to be used for medical purposes. In 2014, medical cannabis was legalized in Maryland with the passage of House Bill 881. And this established the Natalie M. La Parade Maryland Medical Cannabis Commission, or the MMCC, which we'll refer to it today. This MMCC is a 16-member commission comprised of physicians, dentists, podiatrists, nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, or physician assistants appointed by the governor, which also includes the Maryland Secretary of Health, along with a licensed healthcare professional in the experience in hospice care, a pharmacist, and a scientist with experience in the science of cannabis. And this commission, they'll develop policies, procedures, guidelines, and regulations to implement these programs to make medical cannabis available to qualifying patients in a safe and effective manner. Maryland became fully operational with medical cannabis in 2017, and now medical cannabis patients with qualifying conditions can legally obtain treatment that they need. By September 2019, Maryland had 18 licensed growers, they had 85 licensed dispensaries, and 70,000 registered patients. And as of October 1st of 2020, there are over 117,000 patients in the state of Maryland. So that's just a little background on, why, this is permitted in a community and how it came about.
Yeah. So obviously from what you shared, it has a heavy presence, not only in Maryland, but even in our area. And so naturally, people or citizens, you're going to be concerned about how this is taking place in the state and even in the community. So, and you should be concerned, as with any or many types of businesses in the community, because we're all affected. They want to know, you want to know, where are these facilities going to be? Do I have a say? And the answer overall is yes. So, the public is very much taken into consideration about where these types of facilities will be, and it takes certain regulations and processes, as we'll talk a little bit later about. But the growing of medical cannabis was not a zoning permitted use in jurisdictions, particularly in Maryland, prior to 2014. And it has taken some time for this to happen, and very much so the public has a lot of say and input with this.
Yep, you're exactly right. Like you said, it was not a zoning permitted use at the time. So what did Hagerstown do to start permitting this? Well, our planning staff recommended a text amendment change to the land management code, which is reviewed by the Planning Commission. This typically happens once a year unless there is a change that needs to happen sooner. Ideas come from staff research, experience administering the code, and or suggestions or requests from other agencies or businesses. The general public can propose text amendments in addition to the staff. The Planning Commission, which is a local board comprised of citizens, will discuss the recommended change, and at times they will make tweaks or massage the change. This can be over the course of several work sessions. And once the changes in language has been finalized, the Planning Commission will have a public hearing on the changes. This hearing will be advertised twice in the newspaper, and all details will be posted on our website. And this is when the public will have an opportunity to voice their support or concerns about the land management code changes. The Planning Commission then will take into consideration the comments from the public and make any necessary changes as recommended during the public hearing. The Planning Commission will then recommend the changes to the Mayor and City Council, who will have a public hearing on the proposed changes. The public hearing will also be advertised in the paper twice, along on our website. After this hearing, with the elected body, the Planning Commission is only involved again if there's an issue remanded back to the Planning Commission by the Mayor and City Council for further review. Typically, at this step, the Mayor and City Council is the entity tweaking or dropping items that they may have issues with. The finalized changes will then be put into a packet for introduction by the Mayor and City Council as a change to the code. And this introduction by the elected body is not the final step. The introduction will then be voted on at the next regular session. If a majority of the elected body approves the changes will become effective 30 days after the approval of the ordinance. So as you can tell, there is a long and very research process to get something like this to change.
Yeah, absolutely. So of course, City of Hagerstown has gone through this process, mm-hmm. and because we have these type of uses, specifically the medical cannabis uses, that has been an approved process right here in our community. So with this process that Donnie just described, what did that result in? Well, it resulted in an amendment to the ordinance. And that includes, describing the type of use and what is permitted to do. So as an example, and I think it'd be a good idea just to read this, because this is the actual section of the ordinance that was included to allow this type of use. And notice as I read it, it's very broad for a reason. But so the use is described as indoor plant cultivation and processing facility. And that is defined as an indoor cultivation of plants for wholesale distribution of plant and or fruit, seeds, or flowers of the plant. This use may include refinement of plant materials into end products for human consumption or personal use, including canned, preserved or frozen fruits and vegetables, dried culinary and medicinal herbs. Herbs, you like that? Herbs. Other medicinal products, essential and infused oils, spices, teas, dried flowers, potpourri, sauces and salsas, etc. This use shall not include refinement of plant materials, whether other manufactured components into lotions, creams, gels, or other cosmetic products. This use shall not include refinement of plant materials into industrial products such as paper, textiles, rubber, etc. So we read that definition to explain something again as it relates to the cannabis, but kind of in general, it includes other uses as well. So you notice it didn't specifically state medical cannabis, and that was for a reason. But based on the definition, it would include medical cannabis and other uses. Someone may come along, maybe they're not doing medical cannabis, but they want to do a use that's mentioned in that definition. Well, they'd have to go through this process all over again. It's already included in this kind of broad definition. So this definition permits not only medical cannabis, but you know, other types of distribution and plants. Now, this is not a permitted use in every district in Hagerstown. And what is typical with certain types of uses is that you have certain areas of the city that you can do certain things and other things that you can't do in areas of the city. We did a podcast in the past on this type of thing with uses and whether permitted or not. But with the cannabis, this use is permitted as a principal or a special exception in the CCMU, POM, IMU, IR, and IC zoning districts. So in some of those zoning districts, it's going to be permitted just by right. Others, it's going to take a little bit more closer scrutiny and a closer look at to allow that use. So we're just beginning to see how even this type of use, just like any other use, is going to be regulated. It's going to be looked at closely.
Cool. That's a lot of good information there. So now that we know where medical cannabis can be grown and who the MMCC is, who can actually grow the medical cannabis? In Maryland, an application must be submitted to the MMCC to grow medical cannabis. Other than completing the application form, the applicant is to submit the following documents to be included as an addenda to the application form in addition to the $2,000 Stage 1 application fee. So the list of items are as follows. It's a list identifying the applicant's potential medical cannabis grower agents, a list identifying each individual investor with 5% or more of investment known at the time of application, a detailed business plan, including an organizational chart, documentation and source of adequate capitalization, if the applicant is a corporation or business entity, a copy of the articles of incorporation and authorization to do business in Maryland, a record of tax payments in all jurisdictions in which an applicant has operated as a business for the 5 years before filing of the application, a description of the proposed premises, including a preliminary site plan, a security plan, details of the applicant's experience, knowledge, and training in commercial horticulture and agronomic production, the medical cannabis varieties proposed to be grown with proposed cannabinoid profiles, a plan for quality control, a plan for inventory, safekeeping, and tracking, medical cannabis from seed to sale and waste plant material prior to destruction, and a disposal plan for medical cannabis waste. So as you see there, you have to kind of know what you're doing in order to apply for this approval. There's a lot of information there that has to be submitted to the MMCC to get this ball rolling.
Yes, and what I was thinking is obviously a person who wants to do this type of operation, you know, there's a lot of incentive for them to be on the up and up and a lot of accountability.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As well. In addition to what you said, what we may be wondering too is what about the, you know, the side where, hey, is this person, are they going to be on the up and up themselves? So, yeah, you know, they're going to make sure. That is, each locality, all even up to a national level, are going to make sure that this person or these people that are operating are are on the up and up. So that's why even criminal history checks are done for a cannabis grower agent. And even the investors, they're going to be identified on the application and things that you just mentioned. And then there are other security measures that they're going to make sure that everything is on the up and up. For example, they're going to have to provide their fingerprints. And those are going to have to be looked at and approved, even all the way up to the director of the FBI. And there's going to be a request that the individual state and national criminal history record information be forwarded to the commission, along with the investigation into the applicant's history. And by doing that, they're consenting to the investigators who are looking into even their financial history. So they're doing that. And then the commission, they're also reviewing the application and other required documents to determine who has issued a pre-approval of a grower license. So there's even that a little hoop to before, hey, you're good to go. We're going to keep looking, but you've got a pre-approval. And that commission may issue up to 22 pre-approval licenses. I thought that was pretty interesting. And they may even rescind a pre-approval of a grower license if the grower is not operational with 1 year of pre-approval. So they don't want a whole lot of time going by where, you know, anything can happen. And then after an applicant has been issued a pre-approval for a license, the applicant shall submit to the commission as part of its application, even financial statements, audited ones. And that's for the applicant, that's for any proposed grower agent, and the payment of the two-stage application fee, which totals $4,000. So they've got that money outlay too that, you know, hey, they got to be on the up and up. And then the commission may issue a license either to grow medical cannabis or to grow medical cannabis and distribute it to qualifying patients and caregivers on the determination that, you know, all inspections pass, the applicant's operations conform to the specifications of the application as they were pre-approved. And this even includes the premises themselves. So not only does the person, the people who are operating, do they have to meet certain criteria, but also the premises itself. The premise itself has to be legally controlled by the applicant. The premises has to comply with all planning and zoning requirements. And conforming to the specifications of the application is pre-approved, and the first year license fee has to be paid as well. So we just see there's a lot of controls and measures that are in place as this process moves along.
Right, and you brought up about the fees for the applications there. Wait till you hear the fees of actual license itself. So who can be licensed? Well, a person may not have an ownership interest in or control of, including the power to manage or operate more than one grower license at a time. Initially, these licenses are good for 6 years, and then after that, it's 4 years thereafter. And the annual fee here in Maryland is $125,000 per year to be licensed. So it is pricey, and like you said, to stay on the up and up with all of this, it's very expensive, but it's probably well worth it to them. And you know, we explained how to become a grower, but this does not permit the cannabis to be sold to an individual. You must have a dispensary license to dispense the medical cannabis to qualifying patients. And in Hagerstown, we classify a dispensary as a pharmacy, as do many other jurisdictions. Therefore, dispensaries may be located in any location that retail spaces are permitted. And the size of the space dictates the location of the space as either a principal or a special exception use. So there's some information on the actual licenses and where the dispensaries can actually go.
Yeah, and that's good to highlight because we want to make sure that, you know, everyone is aware that you've got the growing operations, and that's what we've primarily been talking about, and all that process they have to go through. And then those growers, they're going to then in turn sell to the dispensaries that will sell to those who qualified to use this product. So just like the growing facility, a license for a dispensary, it too starts with an application. They have to submit multiple documents in addition to the application form, and there's a $5,000 fee. And they have to, in turn, also list the identifying applicants, potential dispensary agent, There's a list identifying each individual investor, again, with 5% or more of the investment known at the time of application. A lot of documentation, corporation information, tax obligations, security plan, quality control, inventory and safekeeping, you know, just going on, how they're going to dispose, much like the grower. They're going to have to provide a lot of information based on all the people who are involved. They're going to, even that's specific to dispensaries, they're going to have a plan for counseling qualifying patients and caregivers in how to use medical cannabis. They're going to have a plan of medical cannabis and medical cannabis-infused products proposed to be dispensed with the cannabinoid profiles. And this includes background checks mentioned with the grow facility. So, again, just so many things that make even the dispensaries accountable for what they're dispensing and taking care of the people who are using it.
Yeah, that list sounds very similar to the grower list as well, which is good to understand and to know. And also, what's similar is the ownership of a dispensary. So with the grower, you can only have one license. For a dispensary, you can have ownership of no more than four dispensaries. And the licenses are valid for the same length of the grow facilities, 6 years initially and then 4 years thereafter. The annual license for a dispensary is significantly lower than a grow facility. This is $40,000 a year here in Maryland. And you could be wondering, anyone can go into a dispensary with a person prescribed medical cannabis to get some for themselves. Well, this isn't the case. When a visitor is admitted to a non-public area of the premises of a licensed dispensary, a registered dispensary agent shall log the visitor in and out, retain with the log a photocopy of the visitor's government-issued identification, continually keep an eye on the patient themselves, ensure that the visitor does not touch any of the medical cannabis. And also, this log is retained for 2 years from the visit date. And currently, there is a six week backlog to obtain a medical card for medical cannabis. So it sounds like there is some time to be to wait to get that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. We've learned that there is a tremendous need, and really the needs can't even really be met at this time for what people want. But, you know, as we talk about these things, we're probably naturally imagine, just from a point that you mentioned, you know, just making sure everything's observed, there is so much in the way of security measures that are put in place for these facilities. And you would be right. It is very, very high, because these products are grown in stored, secured facilities. They have everything from security lighting, alarm systems that are continually monitored 24 hours a day. This includes video surveillance, and some facilities even have 24/7 on-premises guards. And these, in addition to these security measures, this locally, we've been talking about the MMCC, they too heavily watch these facilities. So these facilities that grow and dispense are very heavily regulated. The MMCC can show up with unannounced inspections to make sure that they're following the guidelines that are required. And, you know, so we think about growth, and then we may also think about, well, how much can these types of uses, or these growth facilities, these dispensaries, how much can they be involved in the community as far as a presence? Are they going to overrun our jurisdiction? Well, no. The grow facilities are the most difficult license to obtain, and they take some time. And as we previously mentioned, the MMCC can issue up to 22 pre-approval licenses. So right now, within the city of Maryland, or the state of Maryland, there are 18 licensed grower facilities, and two grower facilities are right here in Washington County. Now, with dispensaries, the commission shall only issue a license for each senatorial district in which it is competing for a license. Again, in Maryland, there are 88 dispensaries that are licensed, and currently there is one dispensary in Washington County. So again, the point is that there's limitations. There just cannot be an unlimited number of these facilities.
That's good to know. And I'm sure that you know, anybody worried about that kind of alleviates that fear. So what are these facilities like on the inside? Well, we, the Hubbub Podcast, actually got a tour of District Cannabis, one of the grow facilities here in Washington County. And they explained the whole seed to sale process. And we must say this, this facility is state of the art. We had to wear masks, booties, and lab coats on the tour. Jacob out there, he's their general manager for District Cannabis. He is very knowledgeable on how the whole operation from start to finish works. He's very passionate about his job, and it shows how much he cares about the product he makes for his customers. And we wanted to thank District Cannabis for getting us out there to explain that process for the podcast so we could inform you guys.
Yeah, that was an interesting tour as well. I mean, they were very open, and a lot of things they covered that we've talked about today, just everything was very open and transparent and, you know, gave us a nice tour. And, you know, the tour was really interesting because, as you mentioned, it took us through the whole process, starting naturally with just with how you would grow anything. It started with the soil. And so they had some really cool setups with how they have things to start the cannabis, the water system, and the computer control hub for the facility. Everything is very closely monitored and managed so that, you know, they grow under the right conditions and the best conditions. And the facility really is very, very efficient in that it recycles its own water. It's very environmental friendly. They can control exactly what each plant needs by computer. The computer can adjust things, the ingredients that the plant needs so that it, you know, gets the best. And once the soil has been prepared for growth, then these plants really just grow on this regimen of 18 hours of lights on and 6 hours off. And they've recognized through studies and tests that that gets the best growth out of the plant. So then once the seed has been planted, a harvest can occur in approximately 8 weeks. And then after it's harvested, the plants are dried to a specific moisture content rate, and then they are hand trimmed. This was an interesting part of the tour where we were able to go into the room, and there were individuals, their sole job was to take a certain part of the plant and trim it, things that weren't useful. And these people were very meticulous. They were hardworking. They were very laser focused. They didn't pay attention to us.
No, I don't even know if they knew we were there.
I don't think so either. But yeah, so a very interesting process. You know, these people are paid to produce things by the hour. So they've got a basically a minimum that they make per hour. And then if they exceed that number that they produce over that hour, then they're compensated accordingly. So there's some nice incentives for them. And these hourly rates were shared with us. They were good hourly rates. And it, just another aspect of this is to know that you can go to these facilities and you can find good paying jobs as well. So that was kind of a neat thing to see. But so just moving on in the process, after what's called the cannabis flower is trimmed and it goes to packaging. And there were several different ways that we saw that the product could be packaged. It's done by hand. It can also be done by a machine in the facility. It was very, very high tech. And the process of hand packing was very impressive. They, as you can imagine, there's a little competition. You know, they've got some records that they set. Some of the people there that move very, very quickly and very, very efficiently to meet, you know, daily quotas. But the machine itself as well, you know, it was a machine that you may typically see in packaging of foods in any other facility. And so the same was true with this facility. They have a machine that packages the cannabis as well. What was really impressive is this was a large machine, but they took a lot of effort and time just to keep it clean. So this machine, which was a very complex piece of machinery, had a schedule where it would be completely broken down and cleaned and disinfected and that kind of thing. So That was pretty impressive as well. And they shared with us how that this product even has a typical shelf life, packaged and lasts usually about a year, but it could also depend on the environment it's stored in to where it's going. And every 6 months, the grow facility is to send samples of their product to the MMCC so that they could look at it to make sure, again, what they're producing is a good quality product. So it was an impressive tour. I know we enjoyed it. I mean, it was very, very interesting and very eye-opening. And we really want to, again, as you mentioned, extend a very high thanks to Jacob at District Cannabis for giving us the tour and providing a lot of this information for our podcast today.
Absolutely. Yeah, we could be here all day talking about that tour. There's just so much information and just how attention to detail they are. Like, their biggest thing is they just do everything right the first time. So when the MMCC comes in for any inspections or anything like that, they have nothing to worry about, you know, as far as security and the quality of their product. They know what they're doing, and that's just good to know that they take it that seriously.
Yeah, and if I could add one thing that Jacob added too is, you know, and it was impressive how they accounted for everything. Each plant has an identifier, every plant. So it's not like something could go missing and everybody would, you know, somebody wouldn't know about it. And they actually go above and beyond so much that MMCC, when they come through, they like, yeah, why are you guys doing this? You don't have to do that. Well, it means that much. We want to go above and beyond. So I was impressed by that.
So one of the last things we want to touch on is the difference between medical cannabis and CBD. So me personally, I didn't know the difference. I'd ask those questions. You know, you can buy CBD pretty much anywhere right now. So why is medical cannabis so regulated and CBD can be purchased anywhere? Well, we won't get into the philosophical discussion on this one. But despite their similar chemical structures, CBD and THC don't have the same psychoactive effects. CBD is psychoactive, just not in the same manner as THC in the medical cannabis is. CBD can have no more than 0.3% THC to be legal at the federal level, whereas medical cannabis has around 12% level of THC. CBD and THC both have medical benefits. They're also both considered safe, and as with any drug, make sure you talk to your doctor or qualified cannabis or CBD clinician before using any of these products. So that kind of wraps it up for the meat of the episode there. And now on to Sean's favorite part of the podcast is the weird news story. So the title of this one is Licked Joint Triggers Precautionary Recall for Michigan Pot Shops. All right, so this is a goofy one. So this cannabis shop in Michigan had to shut down operations for a little while because someone in the supply chain licked at least one pre-rolled joint. So this caused a mess for everyone, as everyone who bought this specific variation of joint had to be notified and they could return their product for a refund or exchange. Plus, the retailer had to put a hold on all sales until the investigation was over. Fortunately, we didn't see anybody licking any joints on our tour. Not that I saw, at least. So.
No, I didn't either. I didn't either.
And if you guys want some details and links to some of the stuff we mentioned in this podcast, check out the description of the podcast. Also, follow us on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram. If you search for the Hubbub Podcast, you can listen to the Hubbub Podcast on pretty much every podcast platform. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor. And you can also watch the episode if you're just listening to us and want to see what we look like. You can find us on YouTube by searching for the Hubbub Podcast. We post all the episodes up there. And it's cool to check out. And while you're there, make sure you're rating the podcast. If you're on Apple Podcasts, give us a rating. That just lets other people discover us that might be interested in the same things that you are. And on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the channel, and then you can be notified when we post new episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate that. We appreciate the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
especially if you think about a topic that we haven't already discussed, maybe we could consider it for a future podcast.
Yes.
And we encourage people to look at our past podcasts, because over the past couple of years, we've discussed a lot of different topics. So there might be something you have had a question about, and we've answered it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're building a huge library full of information for everybody. So it's cool.
Absolutely. And that will include what we will talk about next month, a delicious topic, food trucks.
Yes. You know, we're getting close to lunch right now. And
yes.
Can't touch on this too much. I'm getting kind of hungry.
Yeah. So food trucks, you know, as we know, they're growing, and they've been around in some communities for a very long time. They're starting to do a little here in Hagerstown. I live in Waynesboro, and there's a few there. And, man, they're getting really popular. People really, really like them. But just like anything else, when it comes to uses and these type of presents, there are certain guidelines. So we're going to talk about food trucks as it relates to vendor permits, what is allowed, and a little more detail on that. So that should be a good topic.
And looking forward to that one.
Me too. I'm looking forward to, once we do it, maybe we'll have some more that we can visit. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to researching this one.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that brings us to the last part of our podcast. As always, our musical guest that we're going to feature this month. This is a duo right here in Western Maryland. They've been performing together for a couple of years. I like music in general. I enjoy this presenting this part of the podcast because I like all types of music. And then some types of music and some people just kind of strike me more than others. And I have to say that this was one of them, The Wild Whispers. It consists of Eli Lev and Megan Lee. And they do a lot of original music. Really just some nice music. Their genre is kind of like indie type of music. And individually, their voices are really nice, but together they really, really have a nice harmony. And an interesting setup. He plays the guitar, looks like an acoustic guitar most of the time. And a lot of times she's playing a floor tom, which is part of a drum set
that
normally you don't see played. But she plays it very, very nicely. And it's interesting how they all work together, but really not a lot of nice music. They've become well known. And for any of you who are aware of a segment on YouTube, Tiny Desk Concerts, they were invited to submit some of their music to them. So if you have that happen, then you've been recognized, because that's something that YouTube will feature from time to time. So they've got an upcoming event. They're going to be performing at the Ag Expo in Hagerstown, July 20th. And you can find them, of course. They've got a website, wearewildwhispers.com. And of course, you can find them on social media, YouTube and Facebook. So The Wild Whispers. And so of course, let's listen to them as they take out our show today. We appreciate you listening to the Hubba Podcast. Whoa.